Professor Homer Dixon, Stephen Harper announced last week in Copenhagen after the agreement was made, he said that it was a victory. What exactly did Canada get out of that deal?
I think describing it as a victory is a bit of a stretch, to be frank. A victory in the sense, I suppose, from the point of view of the Conservative government, that some of the big developing countries now seem to be on board, China and India in particular. On board in the sense that they've engaged with the climate change issue and recognize that they're actually going to have to play a part in terms of cutting their emissions in the future. But by any reasonable standard, what happened in Copenhagen gave Canada a terrible black eye because I don't know how many fossils of the award Fossil of the Day awards that we won in the course of the meeting, but I think it was 7 or 8. Canada has been identified as one of the worst performers in terms of making advances in cutting its carbon emissions, and even identified as a country that's been working to try to undermine or block advances in the negotiations. So all in all, I think this was a real blow to our international reputation.
So image losses, but I wonder if we missed opportunities. Do you think that there was something that we could have had just on a more pragmatic level that we didn't get?
I've always thought so. I think Canada is positioned potentially to be a world leader in a suite of energy technologies that the world will have in order to deal with this problem, including such things as carbon capture and storage, perhaps deep geothermal, long-distance piping of carbon dioxide. There are a whole bunch of things that need to be done, and Canada has a lot of the basic expertise and abilities to be right at the leading edge of those developments. And I think there was a period of time when we could have really seized the initiative, especially when the United States, George W. Bush's administration, wasn't taking climate change issues seriously at all, wasn't investing money in them. We could have been out in front. Now we're, in the situation that Canada so often is in, which is catching up with other people who are really moving the game forward.
But if we could have been a contender last week, we had not only government people there, there were oil patch people there, people from the oil sands development. What did they not do? I mean, was there something that could they jumped on this? Could they have made a lot out of it that they didn't?
Canada's in fundamentally a very difficult position, given that we are a resource producer, and one of the critical resources to our economy is energy resources, in particular the energy from the oil sands. And those interests are extremely powerful in Canada, and in particular, they're very powerful within the Conservative Party and the Conservative government at the federal level. So I'm not actually convinced that, given that those basic political and economic realities in Canada, that with this particular government, we would have seen policies, for instance, on cutting carbon emissions that would have really really led the way. But that's why I've always suggested that instead we should have been promoting our abilities to make advances on the technologies that we will need, because those are areas where Canada could really be a leader. But when it comes to actually cutting carbon emissions, we need to do our job and we need to work hard, but it's going to be difficult for us to really be at the leading edge of that process, I think, given the nature of our economy and our industries.
But you're saying that we have the ability to do that, though.
Well, I think we do, but it would require an enormous political fight within the country, and it would open up deep fissures, perhaps, in our federation. I mean, here the Pembina Institute and David Suzuki Foundation, and with the funding of the TD Bank, did the analysis a while ago. It's well known now in the country that what the economic implications of the Harper proposals would be under a cap and trade arrangement, and sure enough, it shows that there would be significant economic consequences for Alberta and Saskatchewan. And it was called irresponsible research. This is like, as they say in the States, this is the third rail of Canadian politics. It's an issue that can't be touched, and we're going to have some quite remarkable political leadership at the federal level to try to to try to strike the deal nationally that would bring Alberta into the game when it comes to cutting carbon. And I just don't see that coming from this current government.
You spend a fair bit of time out west. You've met with a lot of people in the a lot of executives in Alberta and people working in the oil sands. Do they see it the same way? Do they really see? Are they breathing a sigh of relief and happy that nothing of much consequence came out of Copenhagen, or are they frustrated with the lack of political will?
I think there's a lot of frustration in what I would call the more enlightened portions of the business community and the energy industries. And there are a lot of people who realize that there is a serious climate issue that we have to deal with. They want a level playing field. They want clarity. They want to make long-term investment decisions. And it's very difficult when policy is up in the air, when we're, you know, as we are right now, waiting for things to develop in the United States. And I think that's just part of a burden, and perhaps a long-term burden, that the business community has in Canada, this ambiguity. I don't think, though, that anybody should be breathing a sigh of relief at the relative lack of progress of Copenhagen, because the climate problem hasn't gone away. You know, there's a big brouhaha about the science right now between the scientists and self-proclaimed skeptics. But the bottom line is that over coming years, we will continue to see changes in the climate. We could quite likely see further losses of Arctic sea ice, perhaps serious droughts around the world that will affect food supply. The issue is not going to go away. It's going to be continually brought back onto the political agenda by developments in the real world. So I don't think anybody should be breathing a sigh of relief.
You've talked and written quite a bit about adaptation and how what people have to do in order to survive this. A lot of it's going to be not just getting CO2 emissions down, but actually finding ways to survive the changes that are coming. They put committed to a fund that may see as much as $100 billion a year available by 2020. Yes, is that going to be enough? Did you see enough progress last week that it put in place to help people adapt to what's coming?
It's not remotely enough, but I think what was important in this particular discussion is the acknowledgement that there are dramatic disparities on the planet in terms of the ability of societies to cope with these changes that are coming, and that they're going to have to be provisions in the form of investments and wealth transfers to allow more vulnerable societies to cope. So, the amount of money eventually that's put in that pot will, I'm sure, ultimately be a lot larger, but it was an important first discussion. See, climate change is fundamentally a matter of equity around the planet. And until we start addressing directly this enormous gap between rich and poor on the planet, between relatively invulnerable societies and very vulnerable, we're not going to make much progress in solving the problem.
And how much, you spoke earlier about the fissures that are possible within the Canadian Union. Now, we saw Quebec, Ontario, and British Columbia in Copenhagen making very, very committed noises about what they're going to do to reduce CO2. And Ed Stelmach in Alberta saying that that was not very helpful, that he feels he got smeared. Is there is that breakdown going to affect our ability to make policy?
I think the Canadian Federation needs to work this out, and fast, and it needs some concerted leadership from the federal government. Again, I'm not sure whether this particular government is capable of doing it, given the strong influence of Alberta energy interests in this government. But we need to get our act together in the country and work out a national deal. When it comes to developing the new technologies and new forms of resource extraction the world is going to need in a carbon-constrained world, we can all play a role. There's expertise in Alberta, BC, Quebec, and Ontario, and different communities that can all be brought to bear. Instead of dividing ourselves up and looking at this in terms of narrow provincial interests, we need to pull together and play our role as a society as a whole, as Canada as a whole, and trying to work with other societies around the world to address this. I'm deeply discouraged at the moment about the Canadian performance on this issue, and I think a lot of others are.
Just from what you saw of Stephen Harper last week or beyond that?
Well, we are so far off target in terms of our past commitments, and I don't think anybody believes that there's real investment, political and financial investment in the current targets to see those met, the ones that the Conservative government has announced previously. And I think that there's just an absence of recognition at very senior levels, at the federal level, as opposed to in some of the provinces that you mentioned, an absence of recognition of just how big a deal climate change is going to be for our future, and especially the future of Canada, because as we all know, the northern territories, the northern parts of the planet are affected much more severely and warm much faster than other parts of the world, and it's already starting to affect the northern part of Canada very substantially. We're on the front line of this issue, both in terms of the impacts of climate change and because we're a major energy producer, and we could do a lot better. We may not be in the small group of countries that are helping to solve this problem, but we should be at least second tier, and right at the moment we're bringing up the rear.
How do you think Copenhagen will be remembered? How will history judge last week's summit?
That's a very good question, and I've been pondering this because I've been talking to colleagues and friends who were there. One told me this morning that it was a complete train wreck. I think in terms of the organization, we've learned that you can't have 190-odd countries together negotiating all at the same time, that we have to move to a different arrangement, as I was suggesting a moment ago, to a smaller group of the top emitters in the world, maybe ultimately a very small group of five or six, you know, around the table there, and I think this was very significant. In the final negotiations, you had the leaders of India, China, South Africa, Brazil, and the United States, and then the European Union was brought in later. I think it will be remembered, if it's remembered positively at all, for that turning point I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, that all of a sudden this is now a world community that's coming to grips with this issue, and you had the leaders of those countries all around the table simultaneously. In terms of practical commitments, there were virtually none, and I think that's also going to be remembered as a great disappointment. I mean, we don't have any clear targets or timetables for reducing carbon emissions at this point.
Professor Humber-Dixon, thank you.
Thank you very much.